Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
It was November the 19th, 2021, when an awesome thing happened with Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio. Of course, we featured the debut of Jennifer Lieberman, actress, producer, author, general all-round wonderful soul. And the great news is she's back with us today. Jennifer, how are you?
I'm fabulous, Alex. How are you?
Very good, and delighted to touch base with your good self once again. And of course, to look ahead to really a whole new a wonderful world, of course, Year of the Watts. Congratulations, first of all, with Jennifer, for winning the Gold Global Book Award in the coming of age category for indeed what we've just mentioned, Year of the Watt. Well done, richly deserved.
Thank you. And actually, I got some really exciting news just about 2 days ago. They haven't published it online yet, but I won the bronze medal at the IPPI Awards for romance ebooks.
Just goes to show, wonderful thing there. As indeed the line actually says behind you, reading is sexy on the mug, little ident there, just sort of saying for the benefit of the listeners. Great stuff there, so wonderful. So since we last spoke in November, of course, apart from China and Shanghai and one or two other areas around that area, the world has kind of emerged from the pandemic era. Obviously, we've got Ukraine to worry about, so that's something else completely differently. How's it been? Has 2022 been pretty good for you so far?
Yes, you know what? I've had quite a bit of recognition for the book, so that's been extremely exciting. In addition to the two awards we just mentioned, there's a magazine called Scribblesworth Book Reviews, and they voted Year of the Watt the best rom-com of 2021. And I was also awarded the Literary Titan Silver Book Award. So as of now, it's a four-time award winner, including the number one bestseller status. So
we knew this, Jennifer, exciting. When we featured you on the show back in November. So it was inevitable, you know, success upon success. Or is it all down to the fact that you had a fondness for Saved by the Bell back in the day?
Well, you know, yeah, it's all because of Zach Morris. It's all, if I didn't want to be his girlfriend, I don't think I ever would have started writing.
That's the trigger. And Zach, obviously, is just sort of eat your heart out, Zach. That's what we say now, quite clearly. Eat your heart out. Important.
Yes.
We welcome our ace journalism and English undergraduate from the University of Lincoln, Rebecca Bond, to the program now. Rebecca, any thoughts or lines you'd like to raise with Jennifer? Because it's the first time around for you. You weren't on the link we had back in November with her.
I wasn't. Hi, Jennifer. It's lovely to be talking with you. I was just reading a bit about your work and you're very multi-talented. Let me start off by saying that. Really impressed and inspired by you, I must say. But to see that you've adapted your book from your show that you did, your solo show, sorry. I was wondering how your creative process was in transferring that from show form into, a more writing book form.
That's such a great question. And thank you so much, Rebecca, for asking. So I never intended for this to be a novel. Well, actually, that's a lie. When I was brainstorming ideas about a one-woman show, I kind of jokingly threw out the title of the show, which was Year of the Slut at the time, thinking, oh, like when I'm 60, you know, I'll write this crazy novel about the year after my first breakup, when I went on my own self-discovery journey. I never really thought that it would materialize at that time into a show. So, when you brainstorm creative ideas, you just kind of throw things out that you never really intend to follow through with. So that was something I never intended. And the show got some attention in New York. I won an award, the Audience Choice Award, at the festival I was at. And as I was just kind of networking with people, both within my peer group and outside of my peer group, I'd meet people at parties and just kind of mention like, oh yeah, I did this show. And I'd mention the title and everybody would stop in their tracks and be like, that would be a great novel. If I saw that title, I would grab it off the shelf. I wouldn't even need to read the back of the book. Like, it's Year of the Slut. It's just very, most women can kind of relate to what the title alludes to. So after getting quite a bit of feedback from random people, from people within my network about adapting it into a book, I was like, okay, maybe this is something I should look into. So it was actually quite quick to adapt it into the novel. The first, well, ish, the first draft I wrote within 6 weeks. Because I took the structure of the play, but then it was many years of chipping away. I went through three editors. The first editor just didn't get my work. She was a very wrong fit. I couldn't look at the manuscript for 2 years. And, so it was a lot of stop and go, and it took much longer than I anticipated because I abandoned it and I gave up on it several times and went back to my first love, which was creating theatrical projects. I did web series. I did short films. I was hired to do other people's productions in terms of, I did a solo show in Australia. I was flown out to work on a piece there. So it ended up taking a lot of time because I had to restructure the format. And then I was able to take a lot of liberties in terms of imagination because it didn't have to come to life on stage. So just like when movies are adapted from books, a lot of times they fall short because you have an unlimited amount of leeway when you're writing and people get to use their own imagination, but when it has to like materialize into something tangible, it's much more difficult.
I think it's a brilliant concept as well, and I can see it working really well in both forms. I really need to get my hands on the book, certainly, but I really like that you've put that kind of that narrative into your work to sort of get that out into the world. And as you say, it's something a lot of women can relate to and have experience, so I think that's a really, really good concept to be, you know, putting out there into the world.
Thank you. Well, it draws on my own experience of my own judgment. You know, it wasn't even about being slut shamed from people outside of me. You know, it just, as young women, it takes us a while to be comfortable with our own sexuality. And we're fed so many different narratives about who we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to behave, that it was something I really struggled with when I came out of my first relationship. So I think there's a lot of universal themes that most women can relate to because the pressure is the same on all of us.
I think it's wonderful you're taking that kind of responsibility as well to, you know, put that narrative out there. Really inspired.
Thank you.
There we are. Seal of approval from Rebecca Bond, quite rightly so. Now, Jennifer, you do recall back in November when you made your debut, as we mentioned, we were joined by Jessica Burtis in North Carolina. She's still in North Carolina. She's actually in quarantine at present with respect to, yes, the COVID-19, but she's still thriving. Jessica, welcome back to Author of the Week and, of course, the Midweek Drive. Jess, any questions you'd like to put to now the award-winning, the multi-award-winning Jennifer Lieberman?
Yes, I was so excited that I would get to speak to you again because I remember you, and I had a great conversation last time. And with this, with your book, Year of the What, I noticed like your two main characters are very different. And so I was wondering how you get in like the headspace of such like different polarizing women.
That's such a great question. Thank you for asking that. So like I said in my previous answer, it was drawn on my own experience. And I did end up living with a roommate in New York where we were kind of polar opposites. We had very different upbringings. We came from different places. And so one of the characters was loosely based on my experience. And then the other character was loosely based on her experience and her persona. And then in the book, I took it, you know, like times 1,000 to make her into the really fabulous, outrageous character. Kelly was actually my favorite character to write. And I get a lot of feedback that she's everybody's favorite character to read because she's just so confident and kind of out there. So, it did start from a true person that I knew and a true experience. I think actually most of the scenarios in the book have seeds from my reality and my real experiences. And then you take liberties as a writer, you know, your poetic license, and make it into something really fun. But also, as both of the characters have an arc and almost cross over to the other side, they start off very different from each other. And then they kind of get closer as the book goes on. And I think in life, we are all so multifaceted, you know, and it depends which group we're in. You know, in one group, we might be the outrageous friend. And then with a different group of friends, we could be the one who's kind of the prude, you know? So I find that that's actually one of the reasons that I love performing, is because I love exploring all of the different facets of our personas, because there's a little bit of everything in all of us. And given the right circumstances, different aspects can come out.
And did you find that any of your moments in New York City ended up on the page and you're like, that's definitely from my life?
Yes. You know, and it's funny because different people who have known me over the years who've read the book, depending on what stage of my life they knew me at or what experiences I shared with them, people were able to point out like, oh, that, you know, was that inspired by this? Even the character who Kelly is based on, she's the one who like was able to pick out the most things that were rooted in reality. But yes, there were quite a few experiences that did end up in there that were based on reality. That's why in the book, when you open to the first page, it says a true story, dot, 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 kinda. Because it's all kind of based in something that really happened. Maybe not to me, maybe to some friend or some story that I heard. But yeah, it makes it a lot of fun.
That is a fun way to look at it.
Yeah.
We spoke about, obviously, how to produce your own audiobook last time, Jennifer. So I've got to ask the question, has that already in hand? Is it being produced? Are you voicing it yourself? What's the process?
Yes. Yes. So I did actually, I did that prior to the book being published, to the book being launched. However, Audible takes, there's several months of a lag because they have quality control. And then I got flagged because one of my chapters had 2 seconds of dead air extra than they wanted. So the whole book, you know, had to go through the process a second time. So the audiobook is available. And then I think I mentioned that I messed up. I had to record the audiobook twice in its entirety because the first time did not cut it. So I ended up writing a how-to book for other indie and self-published authors, encouraging them to write their own audiobooks. And I came up with 7 simple steps to guide them through it. And it's not just a how-to book. I'm really kind of encouraging and pushing authors to have a go at their own audiobook, because I believe if you have enough conviction to write your story, you are the voice that should tell your story.
And what about casting? As we actually clearly will be seeing the movie versions, novelizations, or at the very least a TV series on Year of the What. Do you have any particular thoughts in mind, or is it a case of, well, obviously I've got to be in it?
Oh, no, you know what? I've aged out of this role. So it's funny. I don't have any aspirations to, you know, reprise the role that I played on stage of myself. But there is one comedic role that I would love to play, and it's the Eastern European esthetician who gives Dana her first Brazilian bikini legs. And she's just a really fun character. She was one of the most fun characters to play in the theater version of it. So if there's a movie or a show adaptation, I guess that's the one that I would love to play. Her name is Yara.
There you go. And we often talk about the kind of playlists that authors, particularly in the contemporary world where music is literally available at the touch of a few keyboard presses. Do you have a particular authorial playlist, or was there a playlist that kind of goes through your mind when you're doing the writing, or when you're writing this text, or in your general creative work?
Definitely. Definitely music is a big part of it. And in the book, she dates her first boyfriend that she's suffering the heartbreak from is a musician. And then he ends up managing another band, and musicians are quite prominent. So there definitely was. I'm a rocker chick myself. I'm into more of the rock and roll music, from classic rock to alternative indie rock. That's totally my thing. I'd have to say, like, Gwen Stefani was a huge, you know, kind of playlist, no doubt. Gwen Stefani, a few of her songs were like in constant loop. And then also there was, I came up with a playlist for the show for while the audience was being seated. So I wanted all the songs to kind of have a theme, but basically all the songs had something kind of sexy about them, like Justin Timberlake's Bringing Sexy Back, and you know, things like that.
So let's go. Gwen Stefani and No Doubt, or Justin Timberlake and Bringing Sexy Back. Which one would you go for now at this moment in time? If you can press that button, which one would you go for?
Oh, no, it's got to be No Doubt, Hella Good. We'll be right back. That's definitely like the anthem for this book.
There you go. We're talking to ace author, multi-talented polymath, Jennifer Lieberman. I've got to say, Jennifer, you probably need to join us on New York Real Talk as well with Pamela Sue Mann. I'm sure she'd find an awful lot of bonding connections with your good self and that. So we have to work on that. But let's turn to Rebecca once again. Rebecca, any further questions or interrogatives you'd like to put to Jennifer?
I'd love to return back to something you said earlier, Jennifer. You mentioned returning to your first love, which was your productions and things like that. So I was wondering how you discovered that that was your passion. I mean, it's really interesting you kind of described that as your first love. Is that sort of where you started? And since then, you've kind of got into writing and things like that as well?
Well, I did start writing quite young. We were discussing before you hopped on how I started writing. I was about 8 years old. I started writing fan fiction for Saved by the Bell, because I wanted to be Zach Morris's girlfriend. So I started writing with the intention of wanting to play the role. And that kind of continued throughout my adolescence, my teen years. And by the time I was in university, before I had graduated, I had written my first feature screenplay, knowing that I wanted to perform in it. I didn't pursue acting as a young person or a teen. It wasn't until I was in university that I started taking acting class and pursuing it. But it wasn't until I graduated that I actually pursued it seriously full time. But that seed of wanting to create stories that I could perform was planted at a very young age. And up until this novel, I only wrote things that I wanted to be in. And I joke that I'm an actor who started writing and producing to give myself acting work. So acting truly is my first love, and I would love to be cast. I do get cast in other people's productions, and I love collaborating and getting hired to be an actor. But I also like telling my own stories and getting to spearhead my own productions. It's like, you know, not all the time, because that's quite arduous and exhausting. And it's all encompassing when you're the writer and the producer and the director and the actor. So I joke that like my dream is just to like show up and know my lines and not have to be in charge of everything. But there is still a joy in spearheading my own creative works.
I think that works really well, though. You say you're sort of writing almost yourself into these roles. I think that gives you a really good idea of sort of how this character is going to come across, not only on the page, but on, you know, in person. So I think that works really well. I think that's a good way of sort of getting the character really in there.
Thank you.
But then I have a follow-up question. You mentioned something just then. How do you balance it all? You just sort of described yourself, actor, writer, producer. How do you find yourself balancing all these things, or do they kind of come hand in hand?
Well, I definitely wear different hats, but at different times. So for example, towards the end of 2019, the last half of 2019, I was hired to be in a play, and that was my only focus at that time. That summer, prior to getting cast in the play, I wrote my my newest feature screenplay, which I'm currently in the early production stages. I'm raising money for it and intend to direct and produce that piece myself. So it kind of depends what opportunities are there. When I don't have anything on the go, then it's time for me to make something happen. And sometimes I have to put those projects aside because I get hired either as a producer or as a consultant or as an actor for something else. But because when I'm getting hired to be the creative, I don't have control over when those jobs come in. Like any freelance career, it's not necessarily consistent. So in between the gaps, I fill it in with my own writing and spearheading my own projects.
You certainly got something to keep you busy all the time then.
Definitely.
And that's before you start talking about all the media interviews and all the other packages that go in place as well. It's unbelievable. Still, never mind. What, Jennifer, would you say if you can go back in time and actually encounter the young pre-college Jennifer Lieberman, what words of advice would you like to pass on to her?
I would definitely tell her, like, you're fabulous. Don't doubt yourself. Go for it. And, you know, don't feel like you have to make anybody else happy but yourself. You know, and that was kind of that is one of the themes and one of the elements in Year of the What is she, Dana, put a lot of her own needs on hold to please her boyfriend and to find the right guy and to be in the right relationship. And those are mistakes that I made when I was younger and embarked in my New York adventures pursuing theater. So I definitely would tell myself not to waste time putting my energy into other people, and putting my energy into myself will ultimately attract the right people.
Well, let's turn back to Jessica again. I mean, I'm thinking more and more actually, Jessica, that we really should actually have Jennifer joining us with Pamela on New York Real Talk. I mean, I'm sure she'll have lots of wacky New York tales as well, really. But yeah, anyway, over to you.
Yeah, so I would love to know what some of your favorite romance tropes are, and not tropes in like a negative sense, just, you know, things that happen in romance books that you just love to love.
Oh, that's such a great question, because I'm such a sucker for love stories. And oh, let me think. Sorry for the dead air in a moment, but I'm going to need a second.
Don't worry. It's not that Jeff Bezos company. We won't actually cancel the whole thing just because we got a couple of seconds of silence. It's called effective pauses. You know, it's yes. if we were doing a play by Harold Pinter, we'd have a Pinter pause built into the whole system. So that's perfectly okay, which presumably means Harold Pinter, no place for any Pinter plays on Audible. But there we are.
Exactly. I guess I love the trope of the guy from the other side of the tracks, or the guy who's kind of pegged as the bad boy, but who really isn't, who really is better hearted than the guy who's better on paper type of thing. I guess that's really one of my, you know, biggest, I guess, guilty pleasures, because so many of us are judged because of, you know, where we come from or what status we have in life, but it really has no bearing on how good our heart is or what's inside of our soul. And a lot of people who are packaged well, you know, you open up the package and you find out that there isn't really anything worthwhile inside.
That kind of sounds like the descriptions of your characters in Year of the What, how they kind of both have like this presentation and they have to like delve deeper into it. And it turns out a bit differently than they would have expected, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times, especially as we're young and kind of coming into our own in early adulthood, our persona begins as a reflection of how we were raised and the ideas that were fed to us. And it isn't until we leave home and emancipate ourselves and have a different friend group than the ones we grew up with and had all the same ideas and upbringing that we had, that we're actually able to find out what we believe and what's important to us and the type of person that we want to be, as opposed to the type of person we were trained to be.
Turn back to Rebecca again in Norwich, England. I'm not sure, Jennifer, whether you ever visited Norwich at all.
I haven't. Where is Norwich?
Well, this is an excellent point, really.
So, it's in Norfolk, more countrysidey, so I wouldn't expect you to know it. It's kind of more out the way, I suppose. We'll let you off. As a sort of kind of final question that I really had in the back of my mind is one sort of, I mean, Alex has kind of asked advice for yourself, you know, your younger self, but for people wanting to start out and almost thinking, wow, you know, Jennifer's really inspirational, I'd love to do what she does, what would your one piece of advice be to perhaps listeners that are thinking that right now?
Be patient with yourself. It's baby steps. You just have to take one step at a time to get to the top of the hill. And everybody wants to just automatically get there, especially today when everything's immediate gratification. You don't even have to really wait in line for anything anymore, because you could just order it on Amazon and have it even within 24 hours or less. So don't get down on yourself, and give yourself the room to fail. Be patient. You're going to fail. You're going to fail before you're going to succeed. And I can't tell you how many times I've failed and fallen on my face. Even this book, was a complete failure. Several times I've abandoned it. And not only that, in 2018, I released it with the original title, Year of the Slut, and it got completely censored. I couldn't do any advertising on social media or Amazon. And I was grappling with this situation for a year and a half before I finally relented and said, okay, if the title is the only thing that's keeping me, you know, from getting the book out, I have to change the title. And I was so resistant and so reluctant because, as I said previously, everybody heard the title and was like, oh my God, that's going to be a great book. So the title was what, you know, everybody was responding to. And I was just like, if I change the title, what do I have? You know, will anyone even be interested? And look at that. I changed the title. It became a bestseller. It's got 4 awards. So that's the other thing too. It's like, you have to experiment. You have to be willing to be wrong. And then you have to be willing to, you know, kind of do some soul searching and decide like, okay, this isn't working. What's not working about it? If, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, I could have easily given up on this book and just said, okay, it's a failure, next. But I knew that there was something there. And only you know what you have inside of you to offer. It's going to take time to mine the gold. It's going to take time to refine the skills, but stick with your conviction. And like I said, just be patient with yourself because, you know, nobody's born perfect.
No, I think that's really valuable and important advice. And I think as well, we can be our own worst enemy at times, can't we? But in the same way, we can be our own best friends. So I think, like you say, you know, be patient with yourself and work with yourself. I think we can all use that as a good reminder sometimes.
Yeah, and I always say to people, we are so much better at talking ourselves out of things than talking ourselves into things. Mm-hmm. And we're not doing ourselves any good. It's quite a disservice. So, mm-hmm. you know, shut out that negative voice and just, you know, meditate on it and like listen to what your heart and your gut tell you to do.
Certainly agreed.
You're based in Toronto, Jennifer, or technically I should say Toronto, to actually get the Canadian approach there. Do you kind of envisage going on now that clearly restrictions in the main have actually been lifted, do you envisage going on a global tours and trends and so on? Or is it a case of, no, going south of the border to those Americans is about as far as I can actually go? I'm not going to go to Europe. Why would I?
Actually, it's so funny that you ask, because the Cannes Film Festival is starting on May 17th. And I will be going to the south of France to go to the festival. And I'm very excited about that. So yes, and there is a good chance I might stop in Paris and in London while I'm there.
There we are. You pass over Lincoln and Norwich, which is great. So good stuff there. So are you going to Cannes as an exhibitor, as a producer? What's the sort of line? Because clearly, is it your first Cannes Film Festival? Are you a debutante on the circuit, or how's it being progressed?
So this will be my third Cannes Film Festival. I was there in 2016 with my first short film, Leash, and I was there in 2018 with my second short film, Details. They were both part of the court métrage and had a screening at the Palais, which was very exciting. This time around, I do not have a project in the festival, but I'm going into the market to try and possibly option the book and find funding for my new feature film, Longing, which is a racy dramatic romance.
Well, if those international producers and filmmakers have any sense whatsoever, they'll be battling to actually get the rights to Year of the What? Year of the What? No, it's not for hard of hearing people. It's basically Year of the What? And it's nothing to do with electricity either and James Watt. I'm just clarifying these kind of things that confusion can ensue, possibly. Jessica, back to yourself. Any thoughts?
Yeah, do you have any kind of book writing coming up this summer? Is it going to be a summer where you're taking off time from writing books to focus on your Cannes projects, or are you going to get back into writing novels?
So that's such a great question, because as a writer, I'm always grappling with which project do I write next. I have a few projects on the go. I do have a sequel to Year of the What, Book Two, Year of the Bitch. So I'm gonna have the same publishing issues. So I knew when I was republishing this one that there was gonna be a trilogy, and I knew I would run into the same censorship issues. So it's just gonna be all under the Year of the What umbrella, Book One, Two, and Three. So Year of the Slut, Year of the Bitch is up next, and I will be writing that. I'm expecting a 2023 launch for that book. And then I also have a stage play that I'm working on. That one is about homelessness and mental illness. And I have a half-hour TV comedy that I'm working on that has to do with fertility issues.
It's an
There's so many
exhausting.
Sh
things we're going to be able to talk to you about next time.
Absolutely. It's an exhausting schedule, Jennifer, or schedule, using an American slimer. But in terms of that schedule, how do you actually sh put in downtime? How do you actually relax? And what sort of things do you do when you're not focused on the next project or the next item or the production or the change or all the other factors?
I love yoga. Yoga saves my life. And I don't do it necessarily like as a workout, even though I do quite intense yoga. I used to be a competitive gymnast, so I don't find it that intense, even though other people would. But for me, that's my peace. That's my calm. It's my peace of mind. And it's also like recharges me. So I have a regular yoga practice. I love going on hikes. I don't do as many in Toronto. When I lived in LA, I would go hiking almost every day, whether it was first thing in the morning or around sunset. So I love being outdoors in nature, and I'm super active. The other thing I love that I haven't been able to do since the pandemic, I love going to see live music and live rock shows. That's one of my favorite things to do. And I guess being able to go to live music and be able to dance is what I miss the most.
And in terms of live performances, is it still going to be Gwen Stefani as opposed to Justin Timberlake, or will you throw in the Canadian Justin Bieber, or is that just heresy?
Yeah, you know what? I'm not much of a pop music fan. I kind of joke that for me, like, I need musicians sweating over their instruments for me to actually enjoy music. So, and I actually like going to a lot of smaller shows with unknown bands. When I lived in LA, I would frequent the Sunset Strip every week. I would go to the Roxy, the Whiskey a Go Go, the Viper Room. All these smaller venues where up and coming bands would play. And I've even had the privilege of seeing some that actually ended up blowing up over several, over time, which is really exciting. It's like, oh my God, he begged me to buy a t-shirt. Now he's opening for Black Sabbath. Ah! So yeah, that's my jam.
Well, there you go. And of course, the Jam are an excellent band as well. Paul Weller used to front them, but that's a British sound many years ago. What the hey, they're still sort of echoing in time and so on. We're ground to the last two questions. Amazingly enough, Jennifer, we've kind of alluded to them in many ways. You might recall what they were, but if not, Jessica's going to ask one and Rebecca's going to ask the second one. So, Jessica, over to you for the first of the final two questions.
Yeah, so Jennifer, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Yes, this was so much fun. I love chatting. I love chatting about what I do because it's just I feel so fortunate that I really went after what I loved as opposed to what most people are convinced to do with their lives. And so thank you so much for having me on and letting me chat.
That's the inspirational side of things done. So, Rebecca, second question from yourself, please.
Can we welcome you back in the near future, Jennifer?
Definitely. I've had so much fun chatting with you all. Thank you, Jessica and Rebecca and Alex, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Well, exactly. And if you're not listening to this at the start of a weekend, just have a wonderful weekend, whatever. Jennifer Lieberman, actress, film producer, extraordinaire, and indeed award-winning novelist, of course, Gold Global Book Award-winning winner of Year of the What. We salute you. Keep on keeping on. And I think we'll bring in a little bit of Justin now. Bye for now.
sexy back.
Yeah.
The mother boys don't know how to act.
Yeah.
I think it's special what's behind your back.
Yeah.
So turn around and I'll pick up the slack.
Yeah. Take up the bridge.
Dirty babe. You see these shackles, baby, I'm your slave. I'll let you with me if I misbehave.
Sexy, huh?
I'm bringing sexy back.
Yeah.
The motherfuckers don't know how to act.
Yeah.
Girl, let me make up for the things you lack.
Yeah.
Cause you're burning up, I gotta get it fast.
Yeah. Take it to listen. The bridge.
Dirty babe. You see these shackles, baby, I'm your slave. I'll let you with me if I misbehave.
It's hard.